This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled, and I'm pleased to have Sean with us for this week. Sean, welcome to the show. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and the company that you're working.
Absolutely, Arman. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Sean Olds. I'm the co-founder of Boodle AI. We say to people, we've been doing AI before it became cool last year. We started out with a predictive analytics platform that was doing traditional AI, data science, and machine learning. But as generative AI launched, we realized there was a great opportunity. And so we've embraced that. And in April of this year, we launched BoodleBox, which is a platform very focused on helping teams of knowledge workers or professionals be able to adopt Gen AI more easily, be able to collaborate with Gen AI, and be able to use their proprietary data and information in a secure manner.
That's fantastic. Of course, AI, and in particular Gen AI, has been at the centerpiece of many discussions. Since I'm coming from analytic world, I hear that question very much from people that analytics is going to be obsolete and AI is going to take over and do everything that we know today. And I don't need to really look at any Excel file anymore and no spreadsheet data crunching anymore and everything is spread, you know. Just something on top, AI will tell me everything I need to know and when I need to know. So definitely this topic is very, very interesting to everyone. If someone came to you and said, you know, what you guys do with AI and Gen AI and bringing team together to collaborate and then bringing AI as part of the group as well to really participate. And how do you see it's going to work in the future, meaning that probably people right now are the main people, the main elements of the discussion and getting some advice from Gen AI. And do you see that then AI is going to be increasingly more crucial to that kind of group discussion to the point that essentially maybe less and less human is involved? Or do you think that it's always would be more kind of augmented the way you see it? How do you feel about it?
We have said since our inception that we believe the most powerful artificial intelligence team is the human machine team. There are things that the machine can do that would take humans weeks, months, years potentially to do, and it may be able to do it in minutes and hours. At the same time, there are things that humans are able to do that the machine's just not going to be able to do. And so being able to combine those two, we see the AI as really empowering the human professional worker. Where it may replace some of the human's time is in those really mundane tasks, those easily repeatable tasks. And let's face it, we got hired into jobs throughout our careers because people saw in us a capability that we could do. They didn't hire us for our ability to do mundane tasks, but we've had to do mundane tasks along the way. Now what we're doing technology is giving to employers is an ability to remove those mundane tasks. So what I'm paying a person to do, they can focus more of their day on. And frankly, that's what the worker wants to do. The knowledge worker wants to do the higher level, more strategic work that they're really capable of doing, not the more mundane stuff.
There's another discussion with regard to AI coming to the whole, you know, action and coming to every aspect of our life, that some people believe that maybe that kind of deep expertise that we needed to have in the past to be valuable to really go there and just participate in some of these, you know, companies and make some impact and create a great financial success for ourselves, for our company, for our society. Now, probably AI is going to dive deeper, faster, better in a very short period of time, getting so much knowledge from so many sources in a fraction of a time that any human being is going to be able to do it humanly. But so we just need to be good kind of generalists, and we need to be good kind of, you know, moderating the whole discussion. Is it the view? Is it the kind of view that you share personally? And I think partially Google AI is collaboration accelerator with bringing AI to the discussion. Do you think that would be a kind of accelerator in that trend, if that's what you think it would happen? Or you think, no, anyway, I mean, we still as human need to really dive deep and have a very, very deep knowledge and expertise in the future, even if AI is there.
Yeah, no, I think it depends on the field, number one. The other reality, though, is AI being in our lives is not new. Before generative AI, when I would get asked to speak on AI, I typically start my speech by asking, how many people in the crowd have used AI in the past 10 days? And invariably, less than 5% of the hands would go up. And I would always respond with, oh, that's interesting. So the 95% of you who didn't raise your hand, you have not watched Netflix this week. You did not talk to Alexa or Siri. You did not take a Lyft to get over here, right? Because AI has been in our lives. We just didn't have to learn it. So I do believe that people are not going to have to become AI specialists because we are making the technology so easy to use. Previously, to use AI platforms, they were large enterprise platforms that were very expensive, and you did need to have a knowledge of AI, maybe even a programming capability. With the advent of generative AI, that has disappeared. What's missing right now in society today in 2024 with generative AI is the muscle memory of knowledge workers to use this in their regular lives, right? When we have a problem or we can't find something, our muscle memory is to open up a Google browser and type in Chinese restaurants and look through 20 links, right? Instead of being able to jump into a generative AI and say, I need to find a Chinese restaurant to entertain a client at on a Friday night that has music at it, right? And now by giving that prompt, it's gonna narrow the list down and be able to provide ideas in a much quicker fashion than before. But that muscle memory is not there for us right now. And so what we've gotta do is figure out, how do we take our teams, give them the ability to adopt more easily, because a lot of people are fearful of this term prompt engineering. I need to learn how to prompt. A lot of them equate it with programming, essentially. So how do we get them past the need to prompt engineer? And then once they're there, especially post-pandemic, where we're in a more remote and hybrid work environment, how do we make it more collaborative so that we don't have teams of people going to their little ChatGPT silos, doing their work, and then coming back together and just, you know, putting it all together? How do we let them collaborate with this technology and then do so in a safe and secure manner?
That's a great insight. I appreciate it. And I played a little bit of devil advocate there. I just wanted to, but you raised some very good points, actually. I would like to also ask you about these custom, GPTs that you guys offer. So when somebody, you know, go to your environment and say, Google AI, you know, I wanted to just go there and just play with it, they would notice that there are a lot of these custom GPTs that you guys have. What is the benefit of it? How do you see it that people should work with it? How does it play into the kind of the whole efficiency and the whole, you know, effectiveness of using, you know, these kind of technologies?
Absolutely. So there's two big benefits. One's a more technical one, which is everybody, I think, who's familiar with generative AI has heard the term hallucination, right? The generative AI models, they want to please you. They want to satisfy you. And sometimes they will give you an answer that is blatantly wrong. And it's because they're dealing with large amounts of data. They can't find the answer it needs, and it gives you an answer. What our AI helpers do is solve a very discrete task. I need to build a product announcement. I need to build a social media post. I need to build a LinkedIn profile. And by giving the bot specific guidance in what it's going to build, it narrows down its tasks and reduces those chances for hallucination. Doesn't eliminate them, but it helps reduce it. So that's one advantage. The biggest advantage, though, for an individual who has not adopted generative AI, maybe never used it before, and is scared of prompt engineering, our bots flip the script. Instead of you prompting them, they prompt you. So if you show up and say, I'm going to use the LinkedIn profile bot to build a LinkedIn profile, the bot is going to introduce itself like any colleague would, and then it is going to ask you a series of 1 to 8 questions. Because it knows what it needs to build an optimized prompt. It knows what a good prompt looks like. And so it will ask me the questions to get the information out of me in a conversational tone, and then take that information in the background, build the prompt, put it into the large language model, and get me the result I need. So we have probably a vast majority of our users who have no idea what a good prompt looks like, who are still getting all the power of generative AI, because they're able to talk to the AI the same way they would any colleague in their office.
It reminds me a time that not a long time ago, but maybe in technology age, it is a long time ago, maybe 10 years ago or so, that we could see that actually, many companies were thinking that really data is the power. So we really wanted to, if you have more data, that means that, that is very powerful and adds a lot of value to your business. Just think about Facebook. Mm-hmm. Just think about Google. Think about Amazon. All of these businesses that are collecting so much data. And this data is highly valuable because it makes their business smarter. Mm-hmm. And so many stories. Now, hearing you in the AI age, it seems to me that actually now the power is about in a different way. It's still data, but in a different way. It's more about really collecting intelligence that is a level maybe superior to just collecting data.
Yeah. The data, though, is knowledge. And so when I talked about that first aspect of the hallucinations, there's several ways, but the two main ways you can help reduce the hallucinations. One is to give it more direct guidance in what it's supposed to accomplish in its task. But the other is to give it knowledge, to give it information, to give it data. So, I hear a lot of people, we talk to people who are doing proposals for work, whether it's a, consulting proposal, a government contracting proposal, whatever it may be. And when I ask them, have you tried generative AI? They're like, I tried it once, but it sounded like a computer. It didn't sound anything like me. Well, of course, because it's got millions of proposals it's using and it's kind of blending them together to give you one. If, however, what you were to do is to log in and upload your 10 best proposals you've ever written and then tell it, here's the client we're writing to, here's the 5 things we need to hit on, use our 10 previous proposals as the foundation, now you've narrowed its focus more. And now it's able to write in your voice. And so data and knowledge is still going to be vastly important, because it helps narrow what the Gen AI is going to do to give you a more tailored response what you need, rather than just a generic, create me a picture of a kitten.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. How do you see it can pan out in the near future? Let's 5 years from now, what you guys doing, how do you see it can really expand and how powerful it can become? What other use cases do you see that would be the prime use cases for you guys in the near future, maybe a year or two from today?
So I was just having this conversation earlier today. As an entrepreneur, one of your favorite points in building a business or a product is when your clients teach you how to use your product in ways you would never imagine. And so I can't fully answer your question, because I am sure the ways, not 5 years from now, 5 months from now, mm-hmm. that our clients are using our product are things I've not thought of yet and my team has not thought of yet. I'll give you a quick example. We created a role-playing bot, to allow people to tell a bot, hey, take on this role for me, right? I want you to be a chief marketing officer so I can have a conversation with you. I want you to be a project manager. I want you to be a social media consultant, right? And it would take on those roles. We had a fundraiser for a major university. She raises major gifts, and she figured out, I can take the information about a potential major gift donor that I'm about to meet with, their LinkedIn profile, their board bios, and other things. And I can upload that along with information about my university, and I can now ask it to take on the role of that individual. And she has said it has prepped her better for her meetings and given her questions she's never gotten before and questions that those donors end up asking. Hmm. And so that was, she taught us how to use that. That was not something we went out with as a use case. But what we quickly realized is, well, we know there's a large number of people on our platform that use it for either job seeking or job transition. Well, okay, if I'm about to go interview with Armand, why don't I sit down and before I go meet with him the day before, I'll put his LinkedIn profile, his bio that I found on the web, and then all the information about his company, and I'll do a practice interview. Right. And so now I'm better prepared. You're happier because you're getting a more prepared candidate who comes in and sits down with you. And so both sides kind of win. But those were not things 6 months ago we had ever envisioned using the platform for. So the ways in which the technology will get used are ones we will discover as we go through. The bigger thing that we're focused on over the next year, the next 12 months, is how do we increase adoption? How do we get teams on there? And it's one of the big reasons we targeted teams instead of enterprises. In our conversations over the past year, talking with CEOs, talking with chief financial officers, talking with CIOs, this is a whole new field. I mean, yes, it's been around since 2017 in research, but in production, it's coming up on 18 months now that it's been around. And it seems like almost every day, ChatGPT is better. And then a week later, Claude is better. And then a week later, Llama is better. And then they leapfrog each other. And so these executives don't want to go drop millions of dollars on an enterprise solution and find out 30 days later, the product they bought is now inferior to something else. At the same time, there's not a single CEO who wants to walk into her or his next board meeting and tell their board they don't have a Gen AI solution. And so, or a Gen AI strategy. And so what we wanted to do was be able to work with teams so that any chief executive is able to say, hey, we're letting our teams use this. We're collecting data. And a year from now, once things kind of level out and we see where the large language models are at, we'll have the data to then make a firm enterprise decision. And so for us, what we see over the next 12 months is trying to drive that adoption within teams and letting teams see the power in what they can do, the efficiencies they can drive, the increase in production that they can do. And I know a lot of people express concern about, oh my God, is this going to lead to massive layoffs? And it's not what we see happening. What we see happening is people professing, what is the advantage that they're getting? Last summer, even, I had the chance to talk briefly with the head of AI at Google. He has now moved on. He's the CEO at Vimeo now. But when he was there, they had done a six-month analysis of productive code from their engineers using Gen AI versus the previous 6 months. And he said what they saw was a 38% increase in productive code. And that wasn't, we're going to get rid of 38% of our workforce. For them, it was, we can be 38% more productive. It means more revenue. It means more opportunities to develop newer products. And that's how we see a lot of companies embracing this and organizations in what comes next. What's that next level we can achieve?
No, makes perfect sense. And honestly, I think we are at the, especially with AI, we are at the particular era that at least I personally feel that always technology, first of all, moves faster than people, right? So it doesn't matter which technology, even when mobile phone, smartphone came, a smartphone is not like it came and a year from that time, every business and every person was embracing it and to the full potential, right? So still there are people that may not use a smartphone to the full potential of it. Yeah. But it takes some time. When cloud came, the same. When every other technology came, it was the same. Now we have AI that is moving faster than any other technology we ever know, right? So that's moving extremely fast. The question is, well, people may not be able to move as fast as technology, meaning that AI may have a lot of advantages for us. Now, technologies like yours can democratize it a little bit, right? So people can really easily adopt it. It's not a big kind of leap is not like I have to buy a very expensive, you know, very expensive equipments or sign up for very expensive services. It's pretty easy to democratize the information and everything, because it requires almost nothing. It's just, you can really start with it in a matter of minutes. You can teach it to people how to use it in a matter of hours, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that has been my assumption, my experience when I really tried, you know, Google AI. Do you think that could help us to bring people on a faster pace?
Absolutely.
To adopt this time around rather than the previous stages of technology movements?
Absolutely. I kind of alluded to it earlier. The big fundamental difference from traditional AI to generative AI, one of them was traditional AI for an organization. If I'm working in a company, for me to get my hands on it, my company had to buy an enterprise license, right? So that was going to take decision-making, procurement, legal, everybody had to go through it.
Yeah.
Any individual worker sitting at their work laptop, their personal laptop, wherever they are, can log into ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, Boodle, any of them, mm-hmm. and for free start using it. No mm-hmm. credit card, no nothing. They can just start using it and play with it. And that's where ChatGPT skyrocketed, right? 100 million people went in 2 weeks. There was no enterprise technology that will ever grow that quickly, right? Because organizations have to go buy it. Now the individual knowledge worker could just log in and they could do it from their phone. Their friend could show them, oh, this is a great technology. So now people can start using it. And then what I talked about before, people are smart, they're intuitive, and they're going to come up with ways the founders of these companies have never thought of before to use it. And as they do that, they now become hooked, right? They want to use it for more. And they okay, I did it for this. I bet I could do it for this. And you know, I'll say this about myself. I'm lazy. I like to do things in the easiest, quickest, most efficient way possible, without sacrificing quality, right? And if I can do something quicker and there's a tool I can do to use it, why not use it? Because that gives me more time to either focus on higher level things or with my family or at the gym or whatever other thing I want to do, but I get more time back in my day.
No, but that's true. Now, let's say, for example, we see the digital divide between, you know, not just different people, but different countries. Mm-hmm. Now think globally about, you know, where we are. Do you think what's the impact of AI on that kind of digital divide between societies inside the nation, as well as just thinking about different countries? Can it help for that digital divide to kind of, you know, cure a little bit, or it's going to worsen it, or it's going to just not have any, you know, impact on it meaningfully, and it will be the same as we are today?
I think there is a huge opportunity for countries around the world to be able to step up in a significant way that they haven't before. Now, that's caveated with, it depends on the restrictions that governments put on around the world. One of the reasons the U.S. was able to advance so quickly in e-commerce and other areas is we didn't put a ton of regulations onto the internet the way that Europe did. And we saw the difference in the way the two geographies developed as it related there. If those same kind of restrictive measures go in on AI, then you'll see geographies that will develop a little bit slower than others. But when you talk about, you know, very big is the gig economy, and the gig economy with people in what would be termed, you know, non-first world countries. One of the obstacles many times has been the language barrier. I was just on a call with a friend who had his German relatives visiting, and their children spoke very little English. He pulled out his iPhone, used ChatGPT 4.0 on voice mode, and just prompted it with, when you hear English, translate it to German. When you hear German, translate it to English. And they sat the phone on the table and they had a conversation, right? So now a gig worker sitting in the Philippines or in India or in some other place who wants to be able to communicate fluently with an American or someone in France or someone anywhere in the world, they'll be able to do so seamlessly. And it won't be with broken French or broken Russian or broken English. It'll be in, you know, perfect in that language, but they'll be able to receive back perfectly in their language. And so nothing will get lost. Where you're also going to see that is just in communities. I mean, look in the United States. You've got communities, I'll take Hispanic communities, where, you know, you have large Hispanic communities where English is not well spoken, right? At least not more technical English. And these people are starting businesses. They need to be able to talk to a lawyer, talk to an accountant. And now they're not going to miss anything, right? Because their accountant who can't speak Spanish is still able to communicate with them and at that very technical level, so they understand what they need. And so I see an ability to step up, not just within terms of country and dividing the digital divide, but also in potentially some of the socioeconomic divisions that exist just within a country.
But that makes sense, especially when we are thinking about, for example, mobile phone versus, you know, computers. When computers and internet came, it started, you know, some of these digital divides to widen, essentially. But then mobile phone came, and then everywhere in the world you go with just a mobile phone, they can run a business, they can sell you, they can charge the credit card. They don't need anything but WhatsApp, right? So essentially that can run the whole small business. And that essentially helped to some of those gaps that were widening. Then it started to kind of go back to where it was. And then you could see everyone now in the world can, even a rural area, you know, you go there and just, you see with their smartphone, they can do a lot that, you know, just running the business from, you know, even selling, from inventory control, from shipping, yeah, for everything can be managed by using that mobile phone and communication software, and as easy as WhatsApp.
Absolutely. And these technological jumps have been done before. So I in a previous career, got to spend a lot of time in Africa in half dozen different countries. But there were countries where I would go into a village that did not have a single landline phone, but almost everybody in the village had a mobile phone, right? They just went from no telephony to mobile phones. They never even did the landline system. And so these jumps in technology have been done before, and they'll be done again, I think, with AI.
Yeah, and to your point about really translation and languages, just imagine how much literature, how much information, how much knowledge is being developed in English every single day, every single hour, every single second. And now all of a sudden, now you make it available to AI and you say, if anyone with any other language came ask question, you can really just still bring the same knowledge, democratize it. And then on the fly, you can really translate it to the language they know, because they are not going to really have access to those because of the language barrier, but now they have. And it just can be a huge, huge opportunity in order to democratize the knowledge that can human being use in order to make the advancement. So that's definitely true. Sean, it has been a great discussion with you. I'm going to also ask you if you can share with us any book that either personally you liked or professionally you liked, or any blog post or something that you thought that from reading perspective, it's something that I enjoy when I read it or I use it. We would love to.
Yeah. So, I mean, trying to pick a book, that's like trying to pick one of your favorite child, right? Like, you know, you can't. obviously building a business, the number of books I get to read have been cut down. I would say since I've started, so I'll give you, if it's okay, I'll give you three books.
Sure.
That have stuck with me over the 8 years of building Boodle. And they're three very different books. One that was more recent because of our evolution into BoodleBox, read the book called Hooked by Nir Eyal. And it's all about the science and the psychology behind people adopting platforms and sticking with it. And he did a brilliant job in the way he walks through it, articulates examples. And it's not just looking at, you know, Facebook and Instagram and all the big ones. He does look at that, but looks at other platforms as well that have been successful and what made them successful. One of my favorites overall that I think I read just as I started Boodle was Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, which is a book. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator, but then has gone into corporate negotiations. And he does a brilliant job of relating almost every corporate negotiation he's ever consulted on to an actual FBI negotiation. And then the last one, which I just finished recently, and I just, he was a brilliant man, will be, you know, with us for years. And the ability to take his knowledge in his writings, translate them into other languages will be powerful, was Henry Kissinger's book, Leadership. But just a man who has seen so much through his life, and in and of himself, just brilliant, was just an amazing read.
All great suggestions. Thank you so much. Again, many thanks to you for making it happen and joining us.
Aman, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Aman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.